The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. The need for independent media is more critical than ever as people search for the truth. For the past 20 years, the Power Hour has focused on subjects which inform and educate about the real challenges we face as a nation. Join us as we discuss the Constitution, current events, and natural health solutions with the best experts on radio. Learn from some of the most insightful commentators you'll find in talk radio.
Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Power Hour. Alan Myers here, good friend, Brady the Warhamster. Brady, thank you for being on today.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
How you doing? Good?
Doing good.
Excellent. Before we get going, a couple of housekeeping chores. I want to let the listeners know that they can now access thepowerhour.com again. Apparently it got hacked in October, but it's back up and running. And you can get a 10% discount off Optivia products using the code OPTIVIDA10 when you check out at the Power Hour PowerMall.com. So check it out. ThePowerHour.com is back. And call-in number. Brady, do we like call-ins?
We do.
Okay. Well, okay. 888-429-5471. And if Doug Gibbs was here and he had to write it down, I'd say it this way. 888-429-5471. Do you think that was too fast?
It was. Can you use that one more time?
888-429-5471. We're ready. Now, one of our main topics today is the Electoral College. But before we get into that, I want to set some context. And to me, context is the word, the term, the thought, the belief, democracy. And for me, that's a four-letter word. But let's see what the founders thought about it. So I'm going to read some quotes. Brady and I are going to chat about it, and then we're going to get into the Electoral College. You ready, Brady?
I am.
This one is from John Adams to John Taylor in a letter, April 15, 1814. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and merges itself. There was never a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. Any thoughts?
Well, we should probably preface this by saying the United States is not a democracy. It is a federal republic.
Yeah.
And Mr. Adams happened to be there at the founding of the country, and he was part of the debates over what type of government we should form. So he's probably a pretty reliable source.
Now, the next one comes from Alexander Hamilton. And given what he did after the war, I'm not a big fan of his, but it's interesting to read this from him. It has been observed that a pure democracy, if it were practical, would be the most perfect government. Experience has proven that no position is more false than this. The ancient democracies in which the people themselves deliberated never possessed one good feature of government. Their very character was tyranny, their figure, deformity.
You want me to comment on why democracy ends up eating itself?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it really comes down to the bigger a population of a nation gets. If you're going to have a national popular vote, you really just need one charismatic person to get 50% plus one voters to completely stomp on the rights of the minority, the 49.9%. You know, it literally, a republic is the only form of government that protects the rights of the minority. And that's why they chose a republic.
Thank you for that. Speaking of eating, this is from Ambrose Bierce. Democracy is four wolves and lamb voting on what to have for lunch.
I should have pulled that meme up for you.
Got a few from Benjamin Franklin. You know how people there's some people out there, oh, we're all the same, we're all equal, right? You've heard that?
I have.
Brady? Yeah. This is from Benjamin Franklin. If everyone is thinking alike, then no one is thinking. This one I really like from Edward Abbey. The duty of a patriot is to protect his country from its government. Thomas Jefferson, I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. Another Benjamin, I got two from Benjamin Franklin. We are all born ignorant, but one must work hard to remain stupid.
That's pretty good.
This one is pretty well known. They who give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
So, what does all this have to do with the Electoral College, Alan?
I'm going to give one more and then we'll get to it. Another John Adams. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. Well, the reason I bring up this, and for those who have got their pocket constitutions out, here it is. Brady, you got yours. You want to get to what we refer to now as the Electoral College. It wasn't called that back then. Go to the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, Clauses 2 and 3. There's this push that, and this is why I want to talk about Electoral College today. There's this push that, oh, we, you know, no, this is wrong, this is bad. We need to protect and preserve our democracy. We keep hearing this from people running from office. And every time I hear it, I'm thinking, what democracy are they talking about? As Brady said, this country was not set up to be a democracy. You won't find that word one time in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation. You won't find it. As Brady said, what were we meant to be?
A federal republic.
There you go. I want to read, just to give you an idea, and then we're going to get into what people have been saying, pro and con, regarding the Electoral College, and then why I think it's necessary and what Brady thinks. This is Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. It's not too long. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. I'm going to interrupt myself. Brady, who has the power here?
They're saying that the states have the power.
Yes. Thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. So that's telling you how many electoral votes they get. This is a real key kicker. But no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. So they don't want anybody in politics that are, you know, that's sitting in the House, sitting in the Senate, or some other part of the government being an elector.
Yeah, what they're saying is they want the people to select the government. They don't want the government to be selecting itself.
Thank you. Now, I don't know when, maybe you do, when it became known as the Electoral College. They were just electors. But the idea is that when you vote, you're not actually, it's not a direct vote for president and vice president. It is a vote to tell your state electors what you want. Would you agree?
I would.
Okay. Now, in some states, members, and we will continue to call it the Electoral College for now on the program. In some states, members of the Electoral College hold the responsibility of voting in the same way that the majority of their state voted. Some don't. Any thoughts on that?
Well, if we look at the pure version of Article 1, 2, Section 1, Paragraph 2, they're making it crystal clear that a state gets to choose their electors any darn way they want. I
Yeah.
mean, that's period. That's very clear that the Congress has no say in it, the federal government has no say in it. So yeah, if a state decides they want their electors to be beholden to the popular vote, the state can choose that. If the state does not want the electors to be beholden and let them vote their conscience, the state can allow that. It is none of the other state's business how your state sends its electors.
Wow, that seems like really states' right oriented. Oh, wait a minute. That's the way the Constitution was written.
Yeah, there's another word for that. We call it federalism, which is why I keep emphasizing we're a federal republic, and it is different than a national republic.
Right.
France has a national republic. They have national elections. They would not need an electoral college. We do not have a national republic. We've got now 50 sovereign states that all have their own rights to choose their electors, among other things, any way they choose.
Thank you for that, and I'll add something to it. There's, and I you've kind of made mention of it. There's a difference between national, the entire country, and federal. And my understanding is that the Constitution was written, as you would say, for a federal republic. Federal meaning that the federal government, this new thing the Constitution is bringing into existence, only has specific powers. And that would be found in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. Anything basically that isn't in there is none of the federal government's business. Now, if you're a national government, everything is your business. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay, thank you. So we were set up that the states, which created the federal government, would basically run their business interior of the country unless two or more states were squabbling. Excuse me. Then the federal government would get involved as a mediator. Other than that, the federal government had no business in any state's business, period. Now, here's where some people start to complain. That is, the total number of electors a state gets is based on the number of senators, two, and the number of members of the House. And that, of course, is dependent on their population. Well, some people feel that this is not okay because if you have a state that has, somewhat of a greater population than a smaller state, let's say the small state has five representatives and two senators, so that's seven. A bigger state would have 10 representatives and two senators, so that's 12. So even though the bigger state has a lot more people, it's not a fair, equal division. It's seven versus 12. And I read this and I started thinking about it, and I realized this is really, really why, another reason why the 17th Amendment is so bad. They knew when they set this up that, and this is not something commonly discussed today. The House is for the people. That's why the number of representatives is based on the population for the House. The Senate was meant to be the voice of the states. And every state, a political entity, was going to get the same voice, two senators. The states creating the federal government still wanted their voice at the federal level. Well, now, because of the 17th Amendment, the Senate is elected the way the House is, which is, to me, absolutely wrong. But people are complaining about the number of electors, ignoring the fact that, well, the state was a political entity to have its own voice in DC. Your thoughts, Brady?
Well, I'm glad you queued that up. Over the last month or so, Doug and I have done a couple of shows on my channel called The Refederalist Report. Just go to Rumble and look for War Hamster and look for The Refederalist Report. You'll see Alan on a couple of shows as well. But we talked about repealing the 17th Amendment and also overturning Reynolds v. Sims on a state level. And we did a little background into it. When we had the Articles of Confederation, which is the first governing document of the United States before the Constitution, we had a unicameral legislature, which meant that there was one senator for each state. Well, Virginia had over 750,000 citizens at the time, and you had some other states that only had or less than 100,000, places like Delaware, and even Georgia was under 100,000. So why would Georgia, with say 70,000 people, have the same amount of legislative power as Virginia, which had 10 times that amount? This was an issue that comes up at the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. And Jefferson came, I'm sorry, Madison showed up with a Virginia plan saying we should have, big states should have more weight. And the New Jersey plan, smaller states, said no, we should actually have it apportioned by each one per state as opposed to population. Well, they came up with a compromise. And that compromise is called a bicameral. Where it did is each state would have its representative in the older and wiser Senate, and the people would have, it'll be a popular vote in the House. The whole idea behind it was to protect the big states from the small and the small states from the big. Neither could bully the other.
Thank you for that. In a way, I think we have to take our hat off to the Articles of Confederation because they brought this problem to issue, and they fixed it in the Constitutional Convention by acknowledging two separate political groups, one being the people, now the House. And the other, the states. Two separate groups. Each state, regardless of population, gets the same vote. The people get votes based on the number. I think it was a very, very good compromise and a good decision.
It worked pretty well for quite some time.
And it really brings to heart, as you started off in the show, we're a federal republic. We're not a democracy. We were never intended to be a democracy.
So I know you brought up this subject because it is silly season, also known as election season, and the usual pundits running around, they're going to say, "Oh, we won the popular vote, they hope. We should abandon, abolish the abolish
Electoral College.
the college." Thank you. Can I buy a vowel? Well, I take it a step further. Not only should we keep the Electoral College, but I say we should expand it. And
How would we expand it?
well, let's go back to the original Bill of Rights. There were not 10 amendments, there were 12. 11 of those 12 have been ratified at one point, 10 of them right away, and then one of them made it in the 1970s. That's now the 26th or 27th amendment, right? The one that never made it on was the original First Amendment, which basically said one House representative per every 30,000 or 50,000 people, period. And the thought behind it was, well, you can be local in your town, but are you really going to be able to get to know 30,000 people? And can they actually know your character, whether you're going to make good decisions, or are they going to be forced to rely on a giant advertising blitz? So it comes down to who had the most money. Well, we have a situation now. Like in California, it's like 700,000 citizens for one representative. And that's ridiculous. There's no way you can know everybody. And in California, you run for state senate, there's 40 million people. And the average person knows 2,000 people in their lives. So you're talking about 300, 300, hundreds of thousands of people that are voting for you based on your advertisements and what other people write. So I'd like to see people, if we want to do true self-governance, and this is not just for president, I'd like to see it for every statewide race or even smaller. Everybody knows enough people in their neighborhood that you can vote. You could probably select one person to be your local elector. And that's a person who's got to stay on top of the events, not someone who pays attention once every 4 years. I don't want people paying attention once every 4 years to have as much of a say as those of us who have skin in the game and are actively involved in the running of our government. I would like to see an electoral system all the way across the board. You've got democracy at the base level, it's popular vote here. It's still got democratic principles, but it makes a lot more sense to have the best of each neighborhood become an elector all the way across the board. And I certainly think that the Electoral College needs to stay intact.
That would be very interesting. I want to add something. Let's stay with this and then we'll come back to that. This was a comment that I read, and tell me what you think. The originalist approach of these people affect their views, as they believe as much should be held intact in the original writing of the Constitution as possible. That's a knock. The Constitution is a contract. Contracts are, for me, are to be read, understood, and followed, not ignored. Because if you don't follow the contract, then all HE double hockey sticks can break out. It's just mind-blowing that people would not want to understand and follow this contract. What do you think, Brady?
Well, yeah, I understand why they don't want to follow the contract because they think they can use changes to their advantage. Yeah, the problem is, yeah, and you never hear this from the people that are they want to get rid of the Electoral College. They want Congress to pass a bill. Well, Alan, do you think Congress has the actual authority to change the Constitution, or is there another process involved in doing that? And they never bring up the idea of an amendment.
Well, I will say this. Given what I know about the Constitution, given what I have seen, Congress believes and acts, and the people allow it to actually violate the Constitution and not follow it. To your point, yes, the founders knew they could not plan for everything, they could not foresee everything. That's why the contract can be amended. And with the first 10, it got done very shortly after the Constitution was ratified in 1789. The amendment process is meant to be really heavy. It's not something willy-nilly. And I'll tell you why I got to write this down. Okay, this to me is the problem with democracy, and I definitely want your feedback. And that is this. If we're in a democracy, who makes the rules? The government,
Yes.
the government. And in a democracy, do you have what you have in a federal republic, rights?
Only as much as the government allows you to have.
Then that's another way of saying, no, you don't.
Yeah, if the government can take away your rights, they're not really rights.
That's my point. And we're gonna leave it at that. We're gonna be back after this important break. Please stay with us. This is the Power Hour.
Empower your day by tuning in to the Power Hour live from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central Time for dynamic discussions and electrifying energy. Got a burning question or a hot take? Call in at 888-429-5471 and be part of the conversation. Can't catch us live? No sweat. Replay the show anytime, anywhere by visiting thepowerhour.com. Want to stay ahead of the curve? Sign up for our daily newsletter and get exclusive show archives and guest info straight to your inbox. Prefer podcasts? We've got you covered on all major platforms and devices. So whether you're tuning in live or catching up on your commute, Power Hour is always within reach. Don't miss out. Join our community and make every hour a Power Hour because your day deserves a boost.
Power your life with the best health, wellness, and readiness products from thepowermall.com. Each purchase you make doesn't just benefit you, it also supports independent news media. That's right. You're backing the good guys who bring you the truth. Feel good knowing that every dollar you spend helps small businesses grow. Imagine a community where your health is optimized and your mind is well informed. That's the future you're building with the Power Hour and the Power Mall. So, take the step today. Empower your wellness and support independent media. Shop smart. Shop independent. Shop thepowermall.com. Together, we make a difference.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean Black Seed Oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good it supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on Black Seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
If your wellness routine needs a boost, you're in for a treat. Meet vitamin B17. Did you know that vitamin B17, also known as amygdalin, is a natural compound found in plant-based sources like bitter apricot seeds? It's time to explore how this powerful nutrient can support your overall well-being. Our vitamin B17 capsules and bitter apricot seeds are made with the highest quality standards, ensuring each product is pure, potent, and packed with benefits. Imagine starting your day with a boost of natural goodness. Vitamin B17 is known for its potential health benefits, from supporting your immune system to promoting general wellness. And for those who prefer a convenient option, our extra potent B17 500 milligrams capsules are here to help you on your journey to better health. Why choose Richardson Nutritional Center? Because we believe in providing you with the very best. Our products are meticulously processed to maintain their natural integrity and efficacy. Your health and satisfaction are our top priority. So what are you waiting for? Embark on a natural journey to wellness today. Head over to thepowermall.com or give us a call at 877-817-9829 to place your order. Discover the health benefits of vitamin B17 and take a step towards a healthier, happier you with Richardson Nutritional Center. Act now and feel the difference.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour.
You are tuned in to the Power Hour. Alan Myers here with Warhamster Brady. Brady, welcome back. Glad you're here.
Pleasure.
All right. We left off. We're going to just a couple more things on that four-letter word, democracy, and then we're going to move on to a surprise topic. But before we do, I like to, when I remember to do this, before I come on air, I like to listen to music. And if I really got something out of it, I like to share it with the audience. Check out the U.S. Navy band, It's America. Fun music, fun video. Check it out. Or call in. 888-429-5471. And so we don't forget, before the end of the show, Brady, self-promote.
I am Brady, also known in some corners of the internet as War Hamster. You can find most of my material on Rumble. Just look for War Space Hamster, or one word, it'll find me either way. And I've got dozens and dozens of videos talking about this and other related topics. You can get me on Twitter or X at war_hamster1776 and on True Social at war_hamster.
Beautiful. I'm not as techie. You can find me on the web, FedEd, FEDED.US. That's FEDED.US for basic monetary system education. If you go to the top of the page and click on the tab, the flame, you'll see all the articles I've written for them. Saturdays, I'm usually on radio with Douglas V. Gibbs, Mr. Constitution, KMET 1490 AM. That's 1 to 3 p.m. West Coast time. And Sundays, Patriot Soapbox, live stream on the computer, 5 to 7 p.m. West Coast time. And my show, For the Republic. Gee, I wonder where I came up with that name. Anyway, last couple of things on this four-letter word. The, you know, people have attacked the Electoral College because it isn't pure democracy. It isn't just the popular vote. And we've talked about, I mean, they knew this back then. What was the concentration of population back in the late 1700s? a few cities.
Well, like I said, the biggest state by population had 750,000 approximately, but that was Virginia.
Yeah.
And that's not even a suburb of Los Angeles these days. So, yeah, things have changed a wee bit.
And basically, you would have a different life in the cities versus the rural areas. And if this was purely popular, as in 51 rules to 49, then you don't have rights that we talked about. You have whatever the government gives you. And I think one of the most telling stories that I've learned about democracy is what happened to Socrates. Do you know that story, Doug? I mean, Brady?
Now go ahead and share it.
Well, apparently Socrates was doing some things that those in power didn't like. And he got accused of corrupting the minds of the youth. Now, this is Athens. It's a democracy. And what happened? The democracy voted that Socrates was guilty. Socrates, drink the hemlock. Corrupting their minds because he wasn't saying what they wanted got him a death sentence. And some people will say Democrats generally hold more progressive viewpoints. And they believe that some aspects of the Constitution need to be adapted for modern times. I'm not sure what they mean by adapted, but apparently they're not suggesting that it actually get amended. They just want to adapt or broadly interpret. My thought of progressive is lemmings over a cliff. Any last thoughts?
Well, are we saying that Socrates was the first victim of government censorship, or just one of the most famous ones from 2,500 years ago?
I'll say one of the more famous ones I know of.
Very good. Yeah, you know, it's funny that this whole idea. The thing you have to understand is, if the small states didn't have these rights, they never would have ratified the Constitution in the first place. They did not fight a revolutionary war against the biggest government in history just to become subservient to population centers in another big government. It never would have been ratified. You don't get to change the rules 100 years later because it's not going your way unless you can actually get the states to agree. Sadly, that happened in 1913 with the 17th Amendment. We need to work on that, but that's another story for another day.
Apparently, we have a caller.
Excellent. Bring him on.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Your name and state, please.
Eric from Missouri, and I didn't know if you knew how to go about it or how to become a state citizen and withdraw from being a U.S. citizen, which has privileges versus rights, kind of like the United States of America versus the United States.
Right.
Alan, you want me to address this?
Go right ahead, and then I'll chime in.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for calling in. We get those questions quite a bit, and there's a bunch of different variations of it. Doug, myself, and my friend Coach Mel did a video on that. You can find it on my Rumble channel where we go through that in quite a bit of detail. We don't specifically address the sovereign state citizen, but this ought to if you take a look at my video, go to Warhamster, and just bear with me, and I'll tell you the exact name of the video. It wasn't that long ago, and it was on... Just had it. It was called Debunking the U.S. 1871 U.S. Corporation Theory. Now, you didn't ask about the 1871 U.S. Corporation. I recognize that. But we touched on some of the other state sovereign topics to wrap around that. So if you really want an in-depth answer, please go check out that channel. It was about 2 weeks ago that we did that video. And we tried to hit most of the topics. And we'll give you some other resources in that video to take a look at and form your own decisions.
And then I hope you have a procedure to how to go about it.
No, you can follow some of the leads and they will talk to you about the procedures. I think what you'll probably find is what you're suggesting may not be exactly how it's been presented. We certainly agree with the principles of being, individual sovereignty is important, but it's portrayed, it's misleading in many ways, the way it's portrayed in a lot of corners of the internet. So I guess with our video, it tells people to be cautious on that one. Really do your homework before you leap.
Yeah, that's what it seems complicated. I heard Scott Bennett and a guy named Wayne and someone else talking about how they've done. Well, this guy named Wayne. Of course, he didn't say his last name, but nativeborncitizen.com, where he has some white papers. But like I said, I didn't know if there was, if you'd already done it or if you had an outline on how to go about it or if it's something that just caused more trouble.
Well, like I said, that's a path that's littered with sad stories of people who tried to do it, you know, something that sounded really good. They came from a place of integrity, and the government disagreed with them, and it didn't work out too well.
So, can I weigh in on this?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Eric, thank you for calling in. I'll put some context to it. There is the Organic Act of 1871, and people have read it, and they say this is how our country became a corporation. Doug and I have done two shows, and in those shows, we've gone through every section of that Organic Act, and there's nothing, in my estimation, that would lead me to believe that. Forget the fact that you can't pass a law that would take control of the government. But there's nothing in it. It would be crazy reading to get to that conclusion. And this is what I would say about being a state citizen, not a U.S. citizen. I wish I still had it up. Oh, I do. Hold on. I'm going to read a quote.
Do you want me to fill some dead air while you're looking?
I got it.
Was it changed to a private corporation trust?
Yeah, it wasn't
a public corporation.
1871, the Organic Act of 1871 was about creating a municipal corporation for D.C., not the country. But here's the quote I wanted to read. This is from Edward Abbey. I don't know who it is, but. The duty of a patriot is to protect his country from its government. That's what we're talking about. So to me, if something's going wrong that would push somebody to want to be, quote unquote, a state citizen, not a U.S. citizen, we got to do a 1776 and start getting involved. And I don't mean violence, but we need to get involved. You know, wake up, stand up, get involved, stay involved. And get our government back to what the founders would be proud of. I hope that helps.
Yeah, the founding principles most certainly.
Okay, thank you.
You are a citizen.
Thank you, Eric.
You were always a citizen of your state first, and the state was part of this union. You know, you took a lot of pride in being from Virginia or from Delaware. That was your identity. Now, as we became more and more of a national government, everyone thinks of themselves as a U.S. citizen. So conceptually, I'd love for us to get back to this idea of federalism and taking pride in the state that you're from and acting locally. But the question that Eric was asking was whether there's a legal maneuver to basically extricate yourself from U.S. citizenship. My answer to that is I've seen an awful lot of people to attempt something along those lines, and it did not work out well for them.
Well, the other thing I would think about is if you actually did accomplish that, and I don't know what that would look like, but... Does that mean you don't have a U.S. passport?
Yeah, you should probably have a California passport.
And does California issue a passport?
They do not.
Okay, so traveling outside the country is going to be hard.
Oh, could you travel outside the state?
Well, they don't. They usually don't check I don't think they check for. Yeah, we're here.
Oh, I was going to say. And also they say you couldn't vote in federal elections. But like I said, originally weren't the state representatives supposed to elect the Senate or nominate and elect the Senate, the federal senators for the state senators to go into the federal court?
Yeah, well, technically there are no federal elections. If you're voting in the electoral
college. Yeah, and they say there's no de jure. There's nobody holding de jure office. It's de facto now. So,
all right, so that's getting into some of the linguistic games some people play. I caution going down that path.
Okay.
I think there's
all right. Well, I didn't know if you had you've already been down that route and then had a plan or if you okay, that's what I was basically trying to find out.
Yeah, when you start getting it, I know the people that are preaching the de jure versus de facto. I don't play those linguistic games. I don't think I've gone down the rabbit hole and I don't think there's any gold at the end of it. But I also know some people I like and respect who disagree with me. So this is not a, you know, I'm not the authority on the subject. I just know what I've looked at. I just, there is no pot of gold there.
Eric, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your listening.
You're welcome. You bet.
You take care. Be safe and well. We're going to do one. Thank you for that caller. 888-429-5471. Apparently, the number works. One last thing, and then we're going to move on to your topic, Brady. And in this article I was reading, and this was considered discussion questions, okay? And they're talking about, you know, abolishing the Electoral College. But here's the one I want to pose to you. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Does the Electoral College further or hinder democracy?
Hopefully it hinders it, to be honest with you. I hope it does hinder it.
The fact that the question is posed leads me to believe that the person who wrote this question doesn't understand the concept of federal republic and doesn't understand that the founders would just hate that we would even want to become a democracy. So enough on Electoral College, because apparently this thing is going to kick into action real soon. Because don't we have something going on next Tuesday?
I believe that would be an election.
Okay. And for those who want to be very specific, there's 538 electoral votes total, and the winning person must receive 270. Now, Brady's got something for me. And you, our listeners, which I don't know what's coming.
Well, first of all, quick bit of trivia. We've got 435 members of the House of Representatives and 100 senators, and that equals 535. Where do the other three electoral votes come from?
I know.
All right, Alan, go ahead. Or should we let a caller see if someone want to call in with the answer?
Wow. We'll get moving.
We'll get
DC.
So the subject that I brought for you, D.C. is one of them.
I thought D.C. got three.
Is it three?
Yeah.
So why do I think that, you know?
I don't know.
Why does Guam vote then? I've got to remember that one.
Okay.
Well, the topic I brought up has to do with the election. There was a lawsuit filed in Virginia that the Supreme Court just ruled on today. And basically, Governor Youngkin of Virginia was trying to clean the voter rolls for people that could not prove that they were U.S. citizens. Now, Virginia's process was to give you like three chances to remedy your proof of your citizen. And after three of them, they remove you from the roll. So it's not just, you know, picking names out of a hat and tossing people off.
Right.
Of course, the Department of Justice challenges this. Their challenge is part of the National Voting Rights Act, the NVRA of 1993, says that you cannot mess with the voter rolls, adjust them at all 90 days prior to the election. Which makes a lot of sense. You want to cut down on the brinksmanship. You're also supposed to not get involved in prosecutions within 90 days, all that kind of stuff. But we've ignored those norms. Virginia's defense is that if you are a non-citizen, you should not be on the voter rolls in the first place. Therefore, the National Voter Rights Act does not apply to you. Well, that was filed on Friday. We got the Supreme Court came back with a decision this quickly, and they voted.
Wait a minute. I got to interrupt. Wait a minute. Something got filed with the Supreme Court last week, and they've already ruled on it?
Yep.
This has got to be once in an ever?
It was pretty quick. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of Virginia, and I'm sure you can't guess who the three dissenters were.
I can't, but you're going to tell me.
They would have been Sotomayor, you know, the three Democrat appointed judges. No, but the nice thing is it was 6-3 and not 5-4. You didn't have a Kavanaugh or a Coney Barrett slipping into some
right.
odd morality and changing it. It's a big deal. And it's not going to impact every state around the country. Voter roll cleanup has been going on, you know, for the last year and a half in every single state. We've been trying to get... Ever since Biden issued Executive Order 14019 back in 2021, where he directed every single federal agency, every single one, to engage in voter registration efforts, Alan, I ask you, who do you think NASA is registering to vote? Or how about the DHS? But they, according to this order, they had to get involved in voter registration.
Why?
Because Biden gave that order. He wants the federal government involved in what are, well, you've already discussed, our local elections.
Well, wait a minute. Is NASA getting involved because we've got voters on the moon?
Well, NASA can't even get to the moon. Elon Musk has to do that.
Okay.
That being said, the question is, why does every federal agency, no federal agency should be involved in federal and voter registration?
I'm going to be really simple and slow. That's my comfort zone. Where in the Constitution was the authority, power, right, duty given the federal agencies to do what is being proposed? That would be nowhere.
It's not there.
Okay. Right there. And to be president of the United States, don't you have to take an oath? Yes. And does that oath include a phrase that would say preserve, protect, and defend?
Yeah. It does.
Well, when the president of the United States is taking a position that is absolutely unconstitutional, is that person preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution? No. I have a huge problem with the federal government being involved with states where they're not constitutionally allowed. And voting is one of them. And we brought that up just by reading Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, where it talks about the electors, right? And that it's state's business, not federal government business.
Now, to be fair, Alan, they have amended legally the Constitution and addressed several issues when it comes to elections over the last 240 years. We've had a couple of amendments, but none of them change what we're talking about today. None of the new amendments ever addressed the topic on the table.
Yeah, that's my point, which is this is, I mean, yet the Supreme Court is weighing in. Why don't they say this is none of our business? Go away. Don't you have to know the Constitution to be a Supreme Court justice of the Supreme Court?
Unless you're a biologist.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I think we have one of those. No, but it's a very good Supreme Court ruling. Now, there's another case that's popping it up that may not be ruled on in time, and that was out of Mississippi. And do you know that case, Alan?
No, I do not. Please inform.
Had to do with a similar issue with the cleaning of the voter registration. I should pull that up so I don't misquote it. But this one, well, I don't think is going to get through the Supreme Court before the election.
Can I make a comment on the general topic?
Yeah.
Okay, this idea of cleaning up the voter rolls. What are they doing every week? I mean, they wait till the last minute. Why aren't they cleaned as they go? And, I mean, if somebody wants to be a voter and they bring stuff that is not good enough to lock them in on the voter roll, then put them in a separate category to be determined and let that person continue to push to get onto the voter roll. Why are they mixing those who are legitimately on with those that may not be? Does that make sense?
The idea is to have a fair, free and fair election where only eligible voters vote. You wouldn't be doing that. Therefore, your idea has to be doing something different. The Mississippi law, which is really fascinating, the Fifth Circuit Court, a three-panel judge ruled last week that ballots received after Election Day are not eligible to be counted. This is good. The problem is it gets sent back down to a lower court to rehear, so it's not going to impact the 2024.
Mm-hmm.
But the decision was really strong, and the judge wrote something along the lines of, we've got 240 years of constitutional history that makes it crystal clear that there is something called Election Day and not Election Month. So this will be appealed, and they specifically targeted this lawsuit for Mississippi because it's obviously a very deep red state. They wanted to bring it in a friendly jurisdiction. someone else may bring a case in an unfriendly jurisdiction like California. Therefore, you're going to have conflicting circuit court rulings, and it's going to have to be litigated by the Supreme Court. May not help us this year, but I get this. I'm guessing this has a chance to be decided prior to the midterms next time around. So those are two really strong election integrity cases that have just happened.
Well, I like the phrase in election integrity. Thank you for that. For me, when I first started voting, you know, right after the wheel was invented, there was election day. Now, there were certain things done for people who are out of country, such as service members. I got that. But you had election day. You showed up and you voted. Done. And you showed ID to prove that you are who you are. And now that's all gone away.
Alan, you're an accountant. You're an accountant, aren't you?
I am.
And isn't there a certain date where everybody has to file their taxes by?
That or get an extension, but yes.
And everyone knows that date well in advance.
Oh, yeah.
And is there a penalty if you don't make that date?
You will be penalized, penalty and interest.
Okay, so why is there no penalty for missing the cutoff to mail in a ballot?
I'm still wondering why, if you're not out of country or in service for the country, why you know, or if there's some medical reason, why the mail-in? The polls are open from from sunrise to sunset. I mean, you have time to get to the poll.
Well, it needs to be a national holiday, and there goes that excuse. I am very concerned about these UOCAVA foreign votes and how they're going to show up in mysterious places over the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I think that is probably one of the biggest vulnerabilities in our elections integrity right now.
I do like the idea of, okay, it's received by this date or it's not counted.
Yeah, called a deadline.
Yeah, it's called a deadline.
We have to meet those in many walks of life, but apparently just not for elections in some states. So fortunately, hopefully that is finally addressed and we can get back to election day.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of the show. Everybody, you've been listening to the Power Hour with Alan and the War Hamster. Keep listening. Keep supporting the channel. Until next time, may you be and stay safe and well.
Cheers, everyone.
There has never been a better time to buy gold and silver. To buy gold and silver direct, call our partners at Cornerstone Asset Metals. You can reach them at 888-747-3309 and make sure to tell them the Power Hour sent you.
In a world full of uncertainties, one thing you can control is your preparedness. Heaven's Harvest is here to help you protect your family when it matters most. Imagine having peace of mind with every meal, knowing it's non-GMO and made right here in the USA. From emergency survival food that lasts up to 25 years to heirloom seeds that ensure your garden thrives, we've got you covered. Why wait for a crisis when you can be ready now? With Heaven's Harvest, you're not just buying supplies, you're investing in your family's future. Secure your peace of mind with Heaven's Harvest. Stay prepared, stay safe. Your family deserves it. Visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 and take the first step towards ultimate preparedness today.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV, a place for answers.